from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into probably our most special Ostrom Avenue podcast episode in the history of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman as normal, but it's crossover time. We are Fairly Odd Parents / Jimmy Neutron. We are the Suite Life on Deck meets Hannah Montana meets the everyone, Wizards of Waverly Place. We are the 90s kids' dreams right now. Ostrom Pod meets Boom or Bust. We have the privilege and the honor. We return Max Chadwick. He took over Woo-hoo! For me when strep throat attacked me, and now he is back on the pod. We said he'd never be back, but here he is. And it's time to give it up. PJ Clark is probably the number one fan of the Ostrom Pod in terms of Twitter engagement and Twitter interaction. So we bring on Max Chadwick and PJ Clark of Boom or Bust, a draft podcast. Follow them on Twitter. Subscribe to them on YouTube at Boom or Bust Draft on Twitter. Boys, this has been it's been a long time coming. I know Ben and I sort of cop out to you guys every time there's draft news for Syracuse football. Now it's time we bring you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I can't believe I'm back because Ben was like, listen, man, this is a one-time thing. You know, you were so bad in that first episode and we're not ever having you back. But hey, you can't keep me down for long. I'm back on the Ostrom Avenue pod, baby. Let's go.
I mean, this is like the world's highest honor. I feel like I just got the Presidential Medal of Freedom for this. It's like, this is fantastic.
I'm not going to confirm nor deny that I said anything to Max about coming back on the show. But I think you left out a huge crossover, which was Simpsons meets Family Guy. So that's what I'm.
That was good. That was good.
Well said. That was well said. American Dad meets Family Guy. I think that was one that happened as well. We're getting a little more recent, but there are a lot of good crossovers. But I think, you know, what just propelled itself into the top five is the Ostrom by Boom or Bust, which is happening right now. A lot of stuff to talk about. Syracuse football, for whatever reason, I mean, despite one of the worst seasons you could ever watch a team have, arguably maybe outside of Penn State football this year.
Oh, God, come on.
That was nice.
Come on.
Nobody is safe on the podcast right now. Nobody.
I'm going to play a Malcolm Butler pick right now, Owen, if you don't stop talking.
All right. We'll call it a truce. We'll call it a truce between me and Max, at least for now. But when you look at this team, I mean, despite, and maybe the reason was they weren't on the field, but you've got three guys that in theory could be drafted this year and with pretty high honors. So is this, we'll just start broad. Is this the first time since 2013 that they can get three guys drafted? Do you think between Trill Williams, Andre Sisco, and Ify Melifonwu, they're going to get three, or does one fall out probably being Ify?
Probably being Ify.
Yeah.
That's not the one I would have.
I would say Trill, right? Would you say?
Yeah. I mean, if there's going to be anybody, I think it's going to be Trill that falls out. I do think they get three, though. And I do think this is going to be a big boost for recruiting now in the fact that you get three DBs out of one position group drafted in 1 year. And you have Garrett Wilson already that.
Williams. Wilson's the sick.
I'm going to screw that up for the next 2 years. Yeah, Garrett Williams, who is going to continue on that legacy, hopefully, after a strong year. But yeah, three of the same position group. That's a win.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a one-win football team, and you got three DBs that are probably going to be drafted. I mean, it's almost like Alabama when they have like three of every position group getting drafted. I mean, this is an unbelievable defensive back class for Syracuse. Trill Williams, I think, is a day three pick, but Cisco and Melifonwu, I think, are both going to be taken in the second or third round. I love this defensive back class. And yeah, I mean, you guys mentioned Garrett Williams, who is a redshirt freshman, not eligible. His dad would be the first to tell you that he's a first round pick. And honestly, like, this guy is a superstar. I think he's going to be another day two pick for Syracuse, maybe next year or the year after that. But I mean, yeah, Syracuse doesn't coach a lot of things right, but what they do well is the defensive backs, and they did really well this year, and they should have three NFL draft picks because of it.
Garrett Williams's dad's Twitter is maybe Black second, trick. Maybe second to Sean Tucker's as the best account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
315. But you mentioned Melifonwu over Williams, and you know, you guys are the draft experts. So me and Owen mistakenly here thought that maybe Williams was the better prospect. What makes Melifonwu more enticing to NFL teams?
I mean, I think, first of all, I think it's the size. You don't see 6'3 corners that move the way Ife Melifonwu does. And I do think I emphasize this a lot on our own episodes. I think bloodlines matter. The fact that, you know, Obi wasn't great, but he has the pedigree, that matters to teams. There's a lot of guys now that guys from our childhood, Joe Horn's kid is going to be a first round corner in this class. Patrick Surtain is the best corner in this class, and his dad was a two-time all pro. There are guys that Antoine Winfield last year, I think bloodlines matter. I think that matters to NFL teams. But Ife's year this year was great. I mean, he played way better than I ever expected him to be, way better than I had him pegged going into this year. I thought he would be a special teams guy just due to the size and speed thing. But I think he's going to be a real cornerback at the next level, and somebody's going to want him on day two.
Yeah, I mean, he, like PJ mentioned, I mean, 6'3", 213. You don't see corners that big. I did some research. There's only 8 corners in the entire NFL that are 6'3 or taller, and only 4 that really play, including Owen's guy, Trey Flowers. But he's also tied for 4th heaviest in the NFL as well. I mean, look, I mean, you mentioned the bloodlines, Obi Melifonwu. I'm worried about the speed a little bit. He ran a 4.71 in high school, which is high school, so he's probably faster now, but still not going to be a burner. A lot of people think he's a safety. I think he could stay at corner, guard bigger receivers, make plays on the football. He's really good ball skills. I just don't put him against speedy receivers. So that's why I have him as a day two player. He's probably even a top 15 corner, I would say, in this class for me.
And I think the biggest thing, you know, the name of the game is and something Syracuse did not do a lot of, but he did, is you don't want to allow points. And it took him, what, 9 weeks to allow a touchdown this year? Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Max, you throw him in a conversation with Trey Flowers. That's not a name that you want to be associated with. But for this one, we'll let it happen, because Trey Flowers might be the worst cornerback in NFL football. Mm-hmm. And
that's why I threw him in there.
I have to watch him every play of every week, which is just absolute disaster. So we'll be firing shots. And PJ, I'll tell you what, you're not safe from anything, but I think you've embraced the bait already. So we won't hurt you too bad at this point. But when you sort of, and maybe this is just me falling into the trap, I was under the assumption the entire year that Trill would be the better draft guy than Ife. So where is where is sort of the fall off for Trill? Because I missed something, but I always thought that he was going to be, you know, a little bit of a tier above Ife.
Yeah, the thing with Trill for me, he's only played in the slot for Syracuse, which is, you know, a way less valuable position than playing outside corner. I think he's really good size too, though. I mean, 6'2", 198. My thing with Trill, so I don't think Ife is a safety at the next level. I do think Trill is a safety at the next level. I think Trill's a really good run defender. Not as great in coverage, but he's a really good tackler as well. I like Trill a lot. I just think that the fact that Ife played outside and also played really well outside, and the fact that Trill has only played really in the slot his whole career, I think that's what pushes him down for me. I still like him enough that I would take a pick on him, but I think he will be – I put him at safety at the next level. I know Syracuse played him at safety a lot this year. But, yeah, that's what pushes him out of day two range and into the day three for me.
I just kind of think I selfishly – and it would have helped the team, but selfishly I wanted to see a full year of at least – Trill in the new defense, because I wanted to see, you know, Andre played Rover for that first game, and we wanted to see how that would affect things for him, and, you know, worked out okay, except for, you know, the injury thing. But Trill was like all over the place, and then he's gonna line up at slot for Syracuse, as Max just said, I do think he's a safety. I agree with Max at the next level. But the thing with me for Trill is that we saw it this year and we saw it at the end of last year. You put the ball in his hands and good things are going to end up happening. Trill, this is inside baseball. So Trill Williams played my high school in the New York State Championship for private schools his senior year. Scored four touchdowns, beat my San Antonio Friars single-handedly, had a kick return, a punt return, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown. It was the single most impressive high school performance I've ever seen in my entire life. And we saw him make moves like that in the Wake Forest game, the Georgia Tech game this year when they had the lateral. I mean, I think he's going to be an impact player on special teams. And I think that's going to matter. That is the thing that gets you drafted on day three. Totally could see him returning punts at the next level.
He hit for the cycle. I mean, he really did there. The four different touchdowns. That is,
it was like, it was absurd. And this was like shortly after he committed to Syracuse and we were home for Thanksgiving break. I went to the game and I was just like, oh, okay. Like that's okay.
Four-star recruit.
Yeah. I'm glad I get to see him.
Syracuse doesn't get many of those.
No, but I mean, the end of his season was very, very weird. Nobody saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see personally if he gets a combine invite, if the combine happens, because if he has the Senior Bowl now, which I think will be a really big deal. Mm-hmm. I want to see if Trill gets a combine invite, because if he does, total workout warrior, I expect him to do great. But if he doesn't, things could get really interesting.
And real quick, you mentioned the iffy Senior Bowl, PJ. I think that is so critical for players, especially underrated players. If he's going to go up against some really good receivers at the Senior Bowl, and if he plays well, he will be skyrocketing for a lot of people. And that's why I have him day two right now. I think that a lot of people are going to start to see if he plays well at the Senior Bowl, that he could be a day two player firmly in this draft.
One guy that everyone expected to go very high, even maybe in the first round before the season, was Andre Sisco. Obviously, that's probably unrealistic with the injury that he suffered mid-year. But, PJ, you know, we learned this past week and a bit the Jets aren't going to get Trevor Lawrence. But could the Jets get Andre Sisco at 65 in the third round?
I'd be surprised if he got there. I would be pleasantly surprised for the Jets. Obviously I would take him at 65. I think he's a pretty solid top 50 guy. The problem when you run into safeties is that they don't go in the first round. And that is, I'm pretty sure there's going to be no safety in the first round this year. And if there does, it's going to be very, very late and it's not going to be Andre Sisco. Partially that is the injury. Partially that is there are guys with, you know, who just played better, like Trayvon Morig from TCU, maybe one of the biggest risers of the entire season so far. And he's going to be the one safety that would go in round one. I think that even has a chance. But when you look at Andre Sisco, it is the production is absurd. It's just ball hawk, ball hawk, ball hawk, which is a good and a bad thing because he sells out a lot. He doesn't cover his assignments a lot because he's the best player on the field for Syracuse. And that's not going to be the case at the next level. But you can't ignore the production and the pass breakups and even the forced fumbles, but you can't ignore 13 interceptions in pretty much 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, the PG mentioned it, the ball skills are ridiculous. 13 picks in 3 years, basically 2 years, like you said, 13 pass breakups as well. If he didn't tear his ACL, I think he probably would have run like a 4.3, which is really, really quick for a safety, especially. But like you mentioned, he's a boom or bust player, roll credits. You know, he's allowed a passer rating of 89.8 when targeted, and he's allowed 8 touchdowns as well. So this is a guy that literally, I think he's such a, you know, he plays safety, but he's anything but safe because he sells out. He either gets the pick or he allows a big, big play. So you got to coach him up at the next level, but the tools and the ball skills are unbelievable. Like he makes plays that no other safety in this draft or even in past drafts could even make. So I think you see a lot of like Eddie Jackson in him and that he allows a lot of big plays, but also gets some picks as well. I'm lower on Sisco than most because of the ACL injury and also because he's a very, you know, hit or miss player on every play. I still think he's a day two talent, but I am lower on him than my co-hosts and PJ especially.
He's going to be scheme dependent, which sounds so dumb. But if you get him, if the right defensive coordinator gets him and lets him kind of free roam, but also reins him in like Syracuse never did and say, listen, you have assignments and you can sell out when you have to, but you can't do it every play. Like if you go back and you watch him, especially last year, he would just creep up right to the line of scrimmage on every play and just follow the eyes. And half the time there's, and especially last year when, if he wasn't great, the outside corners weren't great. Chris Frederick was not very good. You know, you're selling there's no safety help over the top, and it would cost them plays last year. And even when he's lined up on guys in the slot, he's averaging just under 10 yards allowed per target. That's not even per catch. He allows a lot of catches. He allows a lot of yards when he does let the guys catch the ball, which is a problem. But you're not drafting him to be a cover corner. You're drafting him to be a ball hawk. You just have to get him in the right system that allows him to do that with minimizing the risk, which is something Syracuse never did.
All right. Now, if you go over to the Boomer Bust Twitter at any point, or their Instagram or whatever, they live for player comparisons and NFL comparisons. And I know you guys probably haven't gotten as deep on your draft boards to get to the Syracuse guys, but if I can put you on the spot, and if you want to give me someone for one, if you want to give me someone for all three, do we have any comps for the three guys that we've been talking about in terms of these SUDBs?
I mean, you're putting us on the spot. I do like the Eddie Jackson one for Cisco. I thought that was a good call because Eddie Jackson is the same thing. He led the league in interceptions 2 years ago. He's like a sellout, just big play safety. And that's pretty much what Andre Cisco is. I think Andre, I don't know Eddie Jackson's measurables off the top of my head, but Andre is built now where he wasn't his freshman year. He's a big dude now, which I think is only going to help him more. And he's had, you know, he's had to rehab the ACL, but he's had time now to train and get in the gym for the last 3 months, which is only, I think, only going to help him more. But if you look at the change in his body from 2 years ago to now, it's a completely different guy, which I think is a testament to the program. They got him in a good strength regiment, and it worked out for him especially. But Eddie Jackson definitely is a name to throw Andre up against.
Yeah, it's tough for Iffy because I think Eddie Jackson fits for Cisco, but Iffy is that big corner. Like I said, there's only eight corners in the entire NFL that are that size or bigger. I hate to do it to you, Owen, but honestly, like I could see Trey Flowers. Like I don't love Iffy, but I could see him having that impact where he's a starter. He's a starter and he plays. I don't think he's going to be a great corner. I think he'll be a good enough corner that you start him at outside. I do worry about the speed. So Trey Flowers is a little quicker, even a 4.5, but Iffy could probably compare to Trey Flowers. I mean, like I said, there's not a lot of corners to compare him to because like the other guys that are 6'3" are like Richard Sherman. And I'm not going to compare Iffy Melifonwu to Richard Sherman and say, oh yeah, but he's a third round pick. Like, no, Richard Sherman's the best corner probably of our generation. So, or Darrell Revis too. I'm surprised PJ hasn't come at my throat right when I said that.
I was just going to let that go. you corrected yourself.
Of the 2010s. In the 2010s is Richard Sherman. But yeah, if he probably like Trey Flowers, like I said, you just don't see that size. Trill's interesting just because he plays corner, but I think he's a safety at the next level. So I'm kind of coming up with a blank on Trill Williams right now.
So
but
here's the thing with Trill is I he's not a box. He's no. I like he's not going to be like the Jamal Adams, like outside linebacker, like Deion Buchanan, like Cam Chancellor. I'm just throwing out Seahawks for Owen here. He's not going to be that guy who just like is a glorified linebacker. He's not big enough for that. And quite frankly, he's too good in coverage for that. So I don't actually know where he's going to slide in, because the thing is, you don't see. So what? PFF, let's see what Syracuse had. Yeah, Syracuse lists him at 6'2", too. 6'2 is too big to be a slot corner.
Yeah.
He's not worth it, and he's not good enough to play on the outside. At least we haven't seen it. So I don't know. I don't know how he's going to fit at the next level. I don't have anybody I can directly compare him to because he's not even 200 pounds. He can't be the outside linebacker box type thing that now the safety position is pretty much coming.
Yeah, he's definitely been one of the more – you know, just interesting players at Syracuse and now heading into the draft. But if we look forward, you know, to some of the guys that could threaten for it next year showing up on some of your boomer bus boards, you know, we were talking about it earlier. You can't ignore the play of Garrett Williams this year. You know, if he barely allowed any touchdowns, I don't think Garrett allowed one until maybe NC State, or he might have not even allowed one at all. I'm not sure. It was.
I'll check you on that. Let's see. PFF has him at one touchdown.
Three touchdowns allowed.
Touchdowns.
Well, in the last in two the weeks, last two though.
Games. That's the same thing with Iffy. Everybody got beaten that Notre Dame game. It happens.
Yeah. So Garrett, you know, obviously he's a redshirt freshman with even an extra year of eligibility. So perhaps expecting him to try and make a move next year might be crazy. But, you know, how do you think he starts to shape himself as a pro prospect going forward?
I think we have to see a second year of sustained production. I think next year is going to be the year. I don't know if he necessarily leaves after next year, but he inserted himself into the conversation, right? Nobody expected him to be as good as he was, and people know who he is now. So there's going to be eyes on him. It's a lot like Cisco's sophomore year, where he leads the country in interceptions and people start paying attention. Garrett is now on the radar and has to follow it up strong. And if he doesn't necessarily follow strong, yeah, he's got three more years of eligibility to kind of come back from it. But if he does, it's either you capitalize on it in the moment or go back for the third year and hope you don't outright suck. I think next year is the make or break year, no matter whether he declares or not.
Yeah, like I like Garrett Williams. He's got, you know, the average size that you want in a corner, which is 5'11 and 184. I'm not going to say he burned the world down this year. Like, I think it was a very surprising year. I would say, I wouldn't say he was great. I would say he was good. But I came into this year, for WAER even, I said, hey, that outside man, I like Trill and I love Iffy and I love, Cisco, but man, that other outside corner spot, that worries me. We don't know what the heck Garrett Williams is. And he was great. I mean, he was really good this year. So he's a really good run defender. He's a really good tackler. He's only missed 8 tackles this year on 61 attempts, which is pretty good for a corner. Yeah, you know, he allowed a 96.2 pass rating when targeted. Not great. 4 penalties, not great. But like PJ said, like, just build off of this year. This is a really good starting point for him as a redshirt freshman. So I'm not going to go out and say that this guy was incredible and he's a future first round pick. I'm not going to say that, but if he keeps building on this and, you know, keeps up the really good run defending and tackling and improves his coverage, I think we're talking about another potential day 2 pick for Syracuse at corner.
Well, and now the problem is that next year, it's like Will Smith at the end of Fresh Prince looking around in the living room when everybody's gone. It's on you, kid. You don't have 3 guys that are going to play in the league helping you at the back end. So it's put up or shut up time now for him, which we'll see what happens.
So, Max, you were concerned about the cornerback group going into the season. I was a little concerned about the linebackers. That's where there was, you know, a serious lack of experience for Syracuse coming into 2020. But very early on, Mykel Jones showed that he was ready to lead this group to at least a lot of turnovers for what people say about the Syracuse defense. A lot of points allowed, but a lot of turnovers. How does he rate? Because I feel like while Williams might have a little more to prove, it's now been about a season and a half of sustained play for Jones.
Yeah, I like Mykel Jones. I think he's a really good pass rusher. He's had 3 sacks and 14 pressures this year. I mean, he's a really good pass rusher. Not great in coverage. He made plays. So that's the thing. It's kind of like the Cisco thing where it's like, okay, he makes plays. He had 4 picks this year, but he also allowed a 71 passer rating, which is fine for a linebacker, but whatever. But yeah, so he makes plays. He's another kind of like big play guy, but also can allow big plays as well. So you kind of clean up those misplays and keep up the really good plays that he does. He's a good, not great run defender. He's a pretty decent tackler. He missed 11 tackles this year on 68 attempts. But again, 4 forced fumbles. So Mykel Jones is definitely a guy I want to see. Obviously, it sounds weird because he had 4 picks for me to say improve in coverage. But like I said, he allowed, you know, 71% of his targets to be caught and a 71 passer rating. So if he could get rid of the bigger plays against him and keep up the interceptions and passes defensed and forced fumbles, he's a guy that's exciting. And I mean, he's a guy that will get sacks, will get forced fumbles, will get picks. So he'll make a great highlight reel. But when you watch the tape, there are stuff that comes up and you're like, okay, this needs to get better. But yeah, I mean, he could very well be another Syracuse draft pick.
And of the guys we've talked about defensive backs and now an off-ball linebacker, which when you look at drafts, especially defensive backs, every year defensive back is the most drafted position because guys just look for athletes because they're all so malleable and you can do, you know, play them on special teams. You can just find a body and put him in a cornerback. And if he's good, he's good, which is why I think if he's going to go so high because he moves at that height, with unlike really anybody in a long time, this draft is going to be big for big corner gang. There's a lot of 6'2", 6'3", even a couple of 6'4" guys that this is going to get really interesting at the combine. The average measurement for the defensive back at this year's combine is going to be quite inflated. But off-ball linebacker is another thing where, like, you just have to show flashes in college and you'll get picked on day three.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to be able – and Mykel Jones has because he's created turnovers, and somebody's going to want to take a chance on that. He gets in the backfield. He forces fumbles. He gets interceptions. You're not – you know, positional value doesn't so much matter when you get to day three and you're just looking for football players to fill out your roster. But it's hard – you know, you're hard-pressed to take a Micah Parsons off-ball linebacker in the top 10 due to positional value. But once you get to those middle rounds – you just want football players that are going to be able to, that are athletes that can play on special teams. And he creates havoc and he creates turnovers. And that is going to matter to somebody.
We don't need the full analysis on this one if we don't have the full analysis yet, but there's something that we just can't be remiss to go a whole podcast talking about this. Yes or no. Will we at some point get the today I was drafted to the NFL tweet out of Sean Tucker?
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. And I can't wait for it.
I don't want to bet against it because I want to see it happen.
Dude. He was a true freshman and he was fantastic. Like, I'm not even going to say like, okay, like, you know, the whole Garrett Williams thing where I would say, okay, Garrett was good, a lot better than I thought he would be. I want to see him build on it. Like, I think that Sean Tucker was a really, really good runner this year. He broke a lot of tackles. And listen, the big thing with running backs, which you guys know, is that they're not really worth a lot because you can, if you have a great O-line, you can make anyone look good. Syracuse's O-line stinks.
Yep.
Like, not just like, they're okay. They stink. And Sean Tucker was breaking tackles left and right, had 200-yard games, 100-yard games left and right. I really, really like Sean Tucker. Improve, and the big thing with running backs now is receiving. He hasn't do much as a receiver, only had 8 catches this year, and actually a pretty good amount of drops on 18 targets he had. Yeah, two drops, which isn't too bad, but yeah, improve as a receiver. But other than that, man, I mean, you just keep toting that rock the way he is. This is going to be a draft pick. I don't know how high because the running back position is just not inherently valuable, but man, this true freshman season, he's got good size too at 5'10", 202. This is a really, really good running back, and his Twitter is electric, which is a pro,
Elite tweeter. We've seen a lot of people fall, a lot of problems created by Twitter the last couple of years. Looking at you, Josh Allen, Sean Tucker, elite tweeter. Max liked that one. No, but Sean Tucker, see, I feel bad because I don't want to like project the state of the running back position in the NFL in 3 years, because who knows? Running backs might not even exist in the NFL in 3 years the way we're trending. But like, there is totally a world in which Sean Tucker doesn't even have to get drafted. Or like, you know, Chris Carson was a 7th round pick and is now like a top 5 running back in the NFL just because nothing matters. Nothing matters. You look at that draft class especially, and like Aaron Jones went in the 5th round. Chris Carson went in the 7th round. You know, McCaffrey went at 8. And the worst guy out of all of them is Fournette, who is the 4th overall pick. It's like running backs, you can find them. They're a dime a dozen. Even if Sean Tucker goes undrafted, which I'm hard-pressed to believe after this freshman season, if he at least does this for 3 more years, he's going to be good enough to get picked in the 7th round somewhere. But you think he gets better. You would hope he gets better. But all right, so Sean Tucker's going to come in and like make some team out of camp and then like all of a sudden have some weird 100-yard game in like week 13 and win somebody a fantasy matchup. Like, totally going to happen.
And everyone's going to be like, wait, where did this guy come from? And then all of us here are going to be like, we know. He broke 27 tackles too. I mean, like I said, this guy, really good runner. I want to see him. If he improves as a receiver, I'm all in on this guy. And this guy might be RB1 in 2023. Like that, he's really good. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the O-line was terrible and he was still putting up 100-yard games left and right. So that says a lot to me.
And now I'm interested. So it probably isn't going to hit next year. You would assume Tommy DeVito is a quarterback of next year's team. But the year after, with a dual threat quarterback, how is that going to change things? I would assume it's probably going to make Sean even better.
Mm-hmm.
Max, you mentioned the bad O-line. And actually, PJ, I have to give you credit for the first Packers player reference in the podcast, because we've had a lot of Seahawks, but Aaron Jones in the fifth round.
I am a free Aaron Jones believer. Listen, I don't want the Jets to go pay another running back, but if I gun to my head, I'd do it for him.
Well, I, even though I love Aaron Jones, would be fully okay letting him walk, and maybe that's why the Jets are where they are in the Packers.
Yeah, no, that is exactly why the Jets are where they are. But we digress.
But the, you know, the Syracuse O-line, obviously not great. Statistically, you know, one of the worst in the FBS now for two straight seasons. With Tucker putting up those numbers, you know, even if other guys outgain him, do you think that he gets credit for the fact that he runs behind a far worse line than maybe a guy who goes to a, you know, a significantly better Power Five school?
Yeah, I mean, I think he does. And I think if you actually weigh it like that, I think he has to. I think everybody knows the woes of the Syracuse offensive line. I mean, Chris Elmore played left guard for the like entire year. That was not supposed to happen. I think
And he was one of the best. He was one
yes,
of the best.
And he was good, which is just actually like hilarious. I love Chris Elmore. Probably my favorite Syracuse football player ever. But I think, and you see it in PFF. So PFF just weights you as a player. PFF gave him an 80 run grade, which, you know, takes into account how bad the offensive line is. He made a lot of something out of a lot of nothing. And in theory, the offensive line is going to get better. That's the hope. In theory, his numbers would get better. This is not a team that scored a lot of points, so maybe he'll get into the end zone more. He only had four touchdowns the whole year as an RB1. You know, it's not ideal. Those are like Frank Gore numbers. But, you know, listen, I'd expect him to get better. And I do think people know that Syracuse's offensive line is terrible. Hopefully it won't be by the time he actually has to declare for the draft. But this year, people, I at least hope people take that into account.
So, yeah, the interesting thing with Sean Tucker is that, yeah, you can see on PFF, which you obviously love, but he had – how many yards did he have this year? I'm looking at it right now. 638 yards. So, he had 638 yards. 479 of those 638 yards came after contact. So, this guy literally is – like I said, 27 broken tackles this year, only one fumble as well. We even mentioned ball security, which ball security is job security, as we all know. He is a really – really good running back. And the fact that, and Ben, yeah, you mentioned it, the fact that he's producing with a horrible offensive line, it says a lot more to me than a guy's producing, say, on Notre Dame, who has five NFL players on their offensive line.
Get out of here, Kyron. Trash.
Absolutely. So, like, you see Sean Tucker, and I'm just saying, like, NFL teams are going to see that. They're going to see him, you know, basically being tackled right when he's getting the handoff and still breaking off 5 to 6 yard runs every single time. So that matters, in my opinion.
I don't mean to pat Owen on the back here again, but the Sean Tucker must get every carry thing is like that. That has to happen. Because I'm looking at the snap count and like he played 10 snaps in the Clemson game, which I get. Okay, you were trailing the whole time. He played 12 against Boston College. He played 17 against Louisville. I understand these were all blowouts in which you're not running the ball. But also, if Rex Culpepper is your quarterback, you should probably run the ball at least a little bit. And like he only had 137 carries the entire year. And I understand it took him until week four to kind of get going to the Georgia Tech game where it was the coming out party. But you got to just, he's your best player. You got to just give him the rock. You got to just go with it.
All right, Peach, we're done with Syracuse for the time being. So we gotta hit you with one question now. You've solidified the second pick.
Hold on. Are we done with... I just want to mention. So Max, do you want to take your favorite stat?
Oh my God,
I was blew my mind with
PJ. I was going to mention it right at the end, but yeah. Okay, so
okay.
Guys,
I don't want to be done with Syracuse because this is going to blow everybody's mind.
So this is
bonus content. Bonus content on the collab here. Nothing better than this.
Like I said, we love the PFF stuff when they chart broken tackles. And guess who is tied for third in the country, more than Kadarius Toney, for most broken tackles.
Taj and entering conference championship week was first.
Yes, was first. Taj freaking Harris has 21 broken tackles, more than Kadarius Toney. And only behind Jalen Darden and Marlon Williams and Justin Hall, who are all group of five players. So yeah,
Taj Harris led Power Five in missed tackles.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw that out there.
That unreal. I was like, my eyes bugged out of my head when I saw that. So listen, the guy flips off cameras, which isn't good, but he breaks tackles too. So he might have a future. I'm just saying.
You know, I don't think he's going to get drafted, but do you think he could eventually end up at a tryout or something like that?
I think so. I mean, yeah. I mean, look, he was the only receiver for Syracuse, basically. They only threw him the ball. He had 101 targets, too. Yeah, I didn't love what he did this year. You know, I thought maybe the 21 broken tackles are a product of him having 58 catches, too. But yeah, I mean, he could definitely get a tryout. I mean, he's speedy, and he could definitely get a tryout and maybe make a team for next season, you know, a lot. I'm just trying to, like, yeah, as a receiver, I could see him make it.
There are a lot of bad wide receivers in the NFL that are on rosters that don't have at least the numbers. And again, so it's the same thing. Steve Ishmael, Amba Itaulo, if you're in this system, you're going to, as the wide receiver one and really the only wide receiver, you're going to have these insane numbers.
Why am I blanking on the Rams guy right now? Who was last year?
Tristan Jackson.
I was going to say, like, Tristan Jackson. Like,
Tristan Jackson made an NFL team.
Yeah.
And Taj, I think, is probably better than him. Like, Tristan Jackson ended up with, like, 11 touchdowns last year, which I don't understand how that happened. I must have been asleep for all of them. But, listen, Taj has one more year of this, at least. And in theory, if Tommy plays a full year, the numbers are going to be better. He won't have Rex throwing to him. Or if the new kid wants to play quarterback, that might be even better. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think, he's going to get enough targets to have a lot of film for somebody to go watch, because nobody else is going to make an impact on this team.
I want to keep Comments content rolling for one sec.
Yeah, do it.
Extended cut here. We're talking Taj Harris. We've omitted the best player on Syracuse this year, Nolan Cooney, the best Syracuse.
Oh, punter one, yeah.
NFL, Nolan Cooney, like, can we chalk it up?
1,000%. 1,000%. I mean, he's fantastic.
He's getting a tryout.
He's getting a tryout. And, I mean, if you're drafting punters, we saw a few of them get drafted. I mean, how the heck do you look at Nolan Cooney and say, yeah, you're not getting drafted, buddy? Like, he was literally one of the best punters in the country this year. I don't know if he was the best punter. I don't know if he was as good as Sterling. He only has the 1 year of tape, too, because obviously Sterling was maybe the greatest punter in Syracuse history. But robbed of the Ray Guy Award last year. I was still go to my grave saying that. But yeah, I mean, Nolan Cooney was one of the best punters this year. I mean, Syracuse is becoming punter U, man. And I really think that Nolan Cooney maybe could get drafted, but if not, I mean, he could be a starting punter in the NFL.
He's gonna, that's like a priority free agent. Like, I guarantee you he gets signed within like 3 hours of the draft ending if he does not get picked. Like, that is a gimme. Somebody will bring him into camp and he's going to compete for a job. I also, you know, this team didn't score a lot, so they didn't kick a lot of field goals, but, you know, I do think Andre has a shot at some point. You know, somebody's going to bring him in, especially for special teams. And especially with Syracuse now having like the pedigree of special teams.
Yeah.
As specialist, you special teams, everybody gets a tryout. So
exactly. And he won the Grozer Award 2 years ago, which someone's going to see that and be like, oh, the Grozer Award, let's get him in. You know? Yeah. So he'll get a shot. He got worse. I won't deny that, but I do think he'll get a shot just because of what he did in that 1 year.
Special teams, you DBU, Syracuse, you they're developing names. They're not developing wins. It's something that they're going to get, and it's working out. So we're going to go. And
are wins good though?
Sometimes they
think,
are.
I think wins, like, I think you should want to develop.
I don't know. PJ, are wins good? You can answer that question better than anyone else right now.
So yeah, wins are good when you're locked into the second pick and you beat the Cleveland Browns, who I hate. Wins are good. I had all fun watching the Jets for like the first time in years yesterday.
Let me ask you, pick two. Do you chalk it up with Fields or do you bring the conversation in? I know you love your Mormon Mahomes.
No, there is no conversation. The only guy.
Yes, Fields.
No, it's not Fields. The only guy that the New York Jets fan base will not reject is Mormon Mahomes, Zach Wilson. And that needs to be the pick. Do I think Joe Douglas has the stones to do that? That is a different question. I also think this totally depends on who the coach is. I do not think any coach worth a damn is going to want Sam Darnold, as they shouldn't. I do think it's going to be depending on scheme fit, whereas Trevor is Trevor, and it's not going to depend on scheme fit. But if you're bringing in Greg Roman, I do think Fields is probably the better. I think Trey Lance is the best Greg Roman fit, but I do think Fields is probably a better fit for a Greg Roman offense. Fields, you know, maybe not as good a runner as Lance, maybe not even as good a runner as Wilson. Wilson doesn't do a lot of design.
Oh, BS.
He doesn't do a lot of design.
That is BS.
Run,
oh, come on.
Justin Fields gets a chance to run the ball. Zach Wilson doesn't.
Oh my
God. Yeah, he's a better fit.
He runs a 4-4, but okay, yeah.
He has a better chance in a Greg Roman offense due to all the designed runs. I do think it's a coach-dependent thing, but the New York Jets fan base is going to revolt for many reasons because, A, Justin Fields has been not Trevor since their junior year of high school, and the New York Jets fan base does not want not Trevor. They want the shiny new toy. And Justin Fields is going to get killed by Trevor Lawrence on national television for everybody to see on Friday. And that's not going to go over well for a lot of people too. So I think it's Zach Wilson or bust.
All right. For more of their conversations regarding that exact content and more videos and all of that, I'm just going to say right now, get out a pen and paper because you're about to go on a follow spree here. All right. At the real PJ Clark on Twitter, at Chad Maxwick on Twitter for PJ Clark, and Max Chadwick for their Boom or Bust Twitter. It's at Boom or Bust Draft. You can sub to them on YouTube, Boom or Bust, the Draft Show. Find their podcast wherever you get their podcasts. Review them, rate them, like them, subscribe. Give them all of the accolades that you want to give to us, but sometimes choose not to. And while you're doing that, you can follow us as well, at Ben Shulman 7, at OValentine14, at Ostrom Avenue Pod. And once again, wherever you get your podcasts, we have completed the, I'm going to say it's a top five collab in the history of collabs. It's a crossover episode. And unfortunately for Ben and I, we don't have the skill set to cross over the other way. So this is all you're going to get in terms of crossovers between Boom or Bust and the Ostrom Pod, but it has been a riot. So boys, thank you so much for coming on. If you guys, you know, weren't strictly 80s Joel here with the NFL draft, we'd love to have you on for some NBA stuff. But
Quincy Guerrier is an NBA player. I'll leave it at that.
I will confirm that Quincy Guerrier is going to get drafted by somebody.
Yeah.
Love it. Thank you so much for coming on, boys. We had a lot of fun, and we will, you know, in the future, maybe not me as my Ostrom days are unfortunately coming to a close, but Ben and new host to be inserted at a later date could be reaching out once again once we get a little bit more information. So thank you so much for coming on. For Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine, Max Chadwick, PJ Clark, this has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, sponsored by Boom or Bust. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.